From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 22nd day of November 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Eric Snodgrass to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, I'll bring you news of the day, especially new news as it relates to the USMCA. That's the update of the NAFTA trade agreement, this time around from Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House. She mentioned it in her weekly press briefing yesterday. And we'll mention trade negotiations with China as well on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, here are the numbers as they finished in Chicago for the day. December corn, a quarter higher at $3.68¾. The March at $3.78½, down a half. The May at $3.83¾, a half lower. And July at $3.88¾, down a penny and a quarter. And December futures down 1½ cents at $3.92½. January beans, four lower. Finished at $8.97. The March at $9.11¼, down four. The May futures 3½ lower at $9.25. July soybeans, $9.37, 3¼ lower. And the November contract down 2¾ at $9.42½. The bean oil futures up 19 cents at $30.88. Bean meal at $2.99, down $2 even. July soft red winter wheat up 6¼, $5.24. The settlement price, the July hard red at $4.48, up 5¼. Live cattle futures 65 cents lower at 118. 67½ of the December. January feeders at 139.27½, down $3.32½. And lean hogs for the day, 57½ cents higher. The December there at $61.22½ on the settlement price. Crude oil, 63 cents lower a barrel. The ethanol futures up 2 cents. Heating oil about 9/10 of a cent lower for the day. That's diesel fuel. Gasoline, 2½ higher, rather lower on the afternoon. And natural gas is up 10 or nearly 10 cents for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 95 points higher. The dollar up 0.27 and the gold futures $3 higher at $1,466.10. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas to take a look at this marketplace for a Friday afternoon. Hey, Mike, hope you're enjoying your day today.
Having a great day. We just got the cattle and feed numbers out. Todd, you want me to go through those for you?
You bet.
Okay, we got the 101% on feed as of November 1, right on the trade average. Guess placements in October, this was the big number, came in at 110. The average range of trade was 96 to 119 with an average guess of 111. And marketings came in at 99%, at right with the average. I would say neutral fat cattle, slightly friendly the feeders because of the placements number coming in about 1% lower than the average trade guess. Interesting to note, January feeders went down to their 100-day moving average, just around $138. That's going to be a big number for me to see if we can stay above that after these numbers come out on Monday or not. If so, I would take that at face value that maybe we've done enough damage to the downside in the feeder cattle market.
Does this mean much for the December 1 grain stocks report when we see it in January?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we just, and I think you captured it really well on the Commodity Week last week and some other publications that, you know, continue to highlight the fact that if we want more accurate corn numbers, we need to remove the feed and residual as a catch-all basin or a catch-all bucket that finishes the equation out. And I, for one, believe we ought to bring back the weekly grain stocks reports. I thought those were fantastic, where the elevators would report on every Tuesday what was happening. And I felt like that kept everybody on much more the same page. So anyway, getting back to your question, yeah, we still, with placements at 110% and on-feed numbers of 101%, you're talking about 11.8 million head of cattle still out there that need to be fed, and looks like it's going to be a pretty cold winter and pretty light test weight corn.
Things that are happening in Washington, D.C., Speaker Pelosi, we'll hear this in just a bit in the newscast yesterday, cast some doubt on the USMCA during their press conference, though it was said that she met with Robert Lighthizer after that and suggested they had made some progress. We'll see how that goes. And then the deal with China, on again, off again. The president saying two things today. One, that there's a good chance, and two, if he wants it. So those things, I guess that repeats periodically. I just don't know how the trade's reading it anymore.
Well, I think it's pretty clear in the beans and in the hogs. The soybeans, we obviously had been proving weather in South America, but I don't think that helps explain why the meal closed down below $300 a ton for the first time since the end of September. If you look at hogs, we're back to average prices around the month of August, those lows around the August time period. And in the soybean trade, we're now down to mid-October levels. Meal, even worse, as I said, we're down into the price levels that are back in the August-September price level as well. So I think the pork and bean trade is going into the weekend like it has many weekends before, but even more so, not real eager to hear what has to be said, and kind of nervous and scared that no good news is going to happen. I'm actually posting an open blog on my website here later this afternoon, reading the tea leaves. And I actually think the likelihood of getting a trade deal is probably the best it's been in about 3 or 4 months, because you said it just now, Todd, it's really up to the two men. It's up to President Trump. He himself has said that. And I think it's up to President Xi. And I found it very interesting that President Xi is having this big global economy meeting in Beijing. And who does he march out with him after a big meeting but Henry Kissinger, the architect of President Nixon's opening of China back in the 70s. So I think both men at this point know they're needing to get a favorable response by their respective constituency in each other's nations. And I think that President Trump's also walking very well a tightrope when it comes to Hong Kong. And so I think the likelihood is best right now that we get something here in the next 5 or 6 days. Otherwise, that December 15 tariff and the holidays really come upon us very quickly.
Will he exact a trade deal by vetoing the legislation from Congress that puts a mandate on the United States to annually check to see how Hong Kong is doing on its autonomy?
I don't think he'll veto it. That's probably above my pay grade, but I guess it being an election year, and the fact that we have impeachment still red hot in the voters' minds, at least many voters' minds, I'm guessing that he will probably not do anything like that. I'm guessing what he's going to do is massage it where he stands by the U.S. Congress, but he also maybe backs down a little bit on these tariffs. And I talked to a client earlier today, and I said, I don't know where the calculus is in his mindset, why he can't go ahead and do a phase one, get mostly what he wants, and then just threaten that the tariffs will come back on in January if they're not making more progress. And I think we're kind of at that stage right now.
It'd be interesting to see how that goes. And it's in part about tariffs that are already in place, but it's the December 15 tariffs that are expected to go in place, I suppose, that are the big player at this point.
Yeah, you're talking smartphones,
right?
Laptop computers. In fact, I lost a laptop about 4 months ago because of the Windows 7, Windows 10. I thought, I'm going to get in front of this December 15 tariff. I'm a commodity guy. I'm an analyst. I went to a major laptop provider to buy one. They'd already hiked the prices by about 23%. Guess what that came from?
Your back pocket is my guess.
Well, I didn't buy it. I thought, what do I have to lose now? They've already put the December 15 tariffs in place when it comes to the retail price.
Okay. So now we've been all over the place, but Kropka, about corn and soybeans, corn in particular, I suppose, because it's still coming into the system at this time, where you think both of those are and where they're headed.
Yeah, I think higher in the corn market with the wheat clearly leading the show, with St. Louis cash wheat prices now dancing on a five-year high at about 554. I'm hearing a lot more about, yeah, my yields in my June corn are a little bit better than I thought, maybe somewhat even quite a bit better than I thought, but test weights are an issue. And I think, you know, when I got calls from clients this week around the Decatur, Illinois area talking about a posted bid of 15, but being being able to get 25 to 35 for December delivery. I think we know that there is A, the corn harvest that is in the rearview mirror now, and B, we have wet corn, C, we have northern plains that's not harvesting corn, and D, we have a test weight issue, which many of us have been talking about for weeks and weeks and weeks, but it's hitting the cash market now, so we have cash supporting the wheat and the corn, and I think that does transmit into a more firm futures market, especially if we get some kind of trade deal worked out.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Always great to be with you, sir. Have a good weekend.
Mike Zuzulo is with globalanalytics.biz. Hey, don't forget to register now today for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Those are coming up the week of December the 16th. I'll be on the road with the agricultural economists from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. We'll be in Mount Vernon, Springfield, Peoria, DeKalb, and Champaign all that week with half-day events. They end with the noon hour meal. And it's a great way for you to learn and ask questions of the agricultural economists, many of whom you will hear regularly here on our radio station or on this podcast. That's the Illinois Farm Economics Summit. Registration is just $80. You can do that right now online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. In today's agricultural news, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, mentioned USMCA in her press briefing yesterday. Actually, she didn't use the letters USMCA and only referred to it as the trade agreement or NAFTA in its previous versions. Nonetheless, the Speaker was asked if Democrats were able to come to some agreement on labor enforcement with Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer of the Trump administration if the agreement could be passed into law prior to the end of the year. She hedged.
I'm not even sure if we came to an agreement today that it would be enough time to finish, but it just depends on how much agreement we come to. And again, you know what the areas have been. Enforcement overarching. Under that, labor, workers' rights, et cetera, pharmaceuticals, environment. We'll see where we are on all of those. But even if we could agree on the terminology, if we don't agree on the enforcement, we still have a problem.
A problem, too, that is causing a great deal of angst within the agricultural ranks. Associations throughout the day today have been calling on their membership to contact legislators in support of passage of the USMCA prior to the end of the year. However, Republican Congressman Rodney Davis from Taylorville, Illinois, who also sits on the House Ag Committee, thinks that impeachment is getting in the way of USMCA.
Well, I think they're clashing. I think everything that we ought to be able to get done in a bipartisan way, especially the USMCA, I think that they've all been put to the side to just impeach the president. This is not a surprise. The last person who presided over an impeachment in the House was Ray LaHood. He was in the chair during the impeachment in the late 90s. And he told the American people at a hearing, avoid impeachment like the plague, because all of the good things that we talked about getting done together here at this hearing he was at, he said it will not happen.
Congressman Davis made those comments on WSMI at Litchfield, Illinois, and they come to us courtesy of Gabe Osborne, farm broadcaster and member of the NAFB. By the way, after making her comments at yesterday's press conference, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, met with Trade Representative Lighthizer and said that they had made some progress. She told reporters after the meeting that she thought they were narrowing their differences. Well, let's stay with trade for just a tiny bit more, where this morning, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, made this comment. The China deal is coming along very well. The question is whether or not I want to make it. And finally today, the Department of Agriculture projects the fiscal year 2019 U.S. agricultural trade balance to fall to $5.2 billion. USDA's Economic Research Service, or ERS, projects exports at $134.5 billion and imports at $129.3 billion, leaving a $5.2 billion surplus. That's the lowest since fiscal year 2006. Now, unlike overall U.S. trade in goods and services, U.S. trade in agricultural sector consistently runs at a surplus. Although agricultural exports have increased in value since 2016, the value of imports has risen at a slightly faster rate, leading to a declining trade balance. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Join me the week of December the 16th for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Now that week, the Ag Economist from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and I will be on a roadshow. Your banker is likely to be at one of these events, and you should be too. It's your chance to learn from and ask questions from the people you know and trust from here on campus, like Scott Irwin, Gary Stinke, Dale Latz, Jonathan Kappas, Nick Polson, and Todd Hubbs. Details are online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look for the link at the top of the page. Again, that's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. The week of December the 16th will be in Mount Vernon, Springfield, Peoria, DeKalb, and Champaign. It's a half-day event that wraps up with a great noon hour lunch each and every business day of that week. Register for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. On this Friday, let's check in with Eric Snodgrass from Agribal and Nutrient Ag Solutions. Hey, Eric, thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, let's start with the pattern we're in at the moment. We seem to be getting rainfall every couple of days or so. Is it just the beginning of an active pattern like we've had for, 11 or 14 or 18 months?
Yeah, it's hard to remember back when it was dry. Yeah, you know, when you look back even over the last 12 months, we across the United States, for the whole of the country, this is the wettest such 12-month time period on record. And the pattern that keeps repeating itself is we keep digging this trough into the west. And every time that happens, we're on the kind of the upswing side of it. This is where everything kind of ejects in the middle part of the country. And that's happening, you know, right now. We watched over the weekend very heavy rainfall. And very heavy rainfall that was down in parts of the southwest. And now all that rain's moving through the mid-south and over toward the mid-Atlantic. They got another system that's coming through that same area that will likely be on the northern side of over the weekend. But then here it goes again. Next Tuesday evening, we're watching a system that's going to be emerging in the central part of the U.S. And that's an important one to watch because we're getting very close to an important holiday here and a lot of travel probably happening on that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday timeframe. And as that system comes through right now, latest model projections actually take the low right through Illinois. So we will likely be on the rainy side of it, but it's another day of rain. Where could the snow be? Definitely on the backside. So if you're heading to Iowa, heading to Wisconsin, heading to Minnesota, I want to be on the lookout next Tuesday, time from Tuesday into Wednesday for a pretty big system. And it doesn't stop there, Tom. You said active. It's active. As that all comes through, deep trough digs into California. And as that trough gets into California, it's going to be substantially deep. And it's going to be bringing a lot of rain out west, a bunch of snow in the mountains, and it has to go across the country again. So when I look out over the next 2 weeks, and I look and see that we may have up to 5 separate systems that come sweeping through the midsection of the country, if we're trying to get fall field work done, if we're trying to get, you know, well, crops still out of the ground, our windows are going to be very, very tight. So yes, this pattern that we're in, well, it just feels like the rest of 2019, doesn't it? I mean, it just keeps disrupting production ag across the midsection of the country.
So you've mentioned this big trough several times. Are there any other big factors that we ought to be looking at moving forward?
Yeah, you know, when I try to look out as far as I can, a lot of the signals in the longer term forecast really come out of the Pacific and then, of course, also just south of Greenland as well. So here's the big things we're watching, okay? We are having right now a resurgence of this thing we've been talking about, this Indian Ocean Dipole event. And that big positive Indian Ocean Dipole event is doing a couple of things. One, it's faking us out, making it look as though we've got kind of this weak El Nino going on. Two, it's shoving a bunch of momentum. This is just movement of the atmosphere into the North Pacific. And that's why we get the diving troughs that keep coming across the West and then across the Midwest. And then the third thing that it's doing is that it's taking the Madden-Julian oscillation and just stuffing it into phase one and not letting it move. So basically we have this one thing that's kind of got a death grip on the flow pattern in the tropics. Now, what's the translation of all of that? If that slowly transitions out of that, which we're anticipating happening through the month of December, we're going to get to a whole new pattern. Add to that, polar vortex disruption possibly happening in the first couple of weeks of the month of December. So people say, hey, give me as far out as you can go. And I'm like, I've got so many complicating factors that's really kind of messing up the long-range forecast for the center part of North America through the next 15 to 20 days.
Can you do better with South America?
I feel like I can a little bit better. And the reason why is because when I look at South America, it's all about just determining the strength of the Brazilian monsoon. Now, in the near term, we're not seeing anything that's majorly disrupting that pattern. But I'll tell you what to watch, okay? What to watch is we are anticipating the Indian Ocean Dipole. We're anticipating that feature to slowly wane throughout the month of December. Now, what we really care about for South America is what happens with January and February precipitation. And if we lose the strong Indian Ocean Dipole event, I'm going to then be watching for cooler water to try to surface in the El Nino region. And if that happens, that could be very disruptive to the Brazilian monsoon right when they need the precipitation the most. So whereas before I wasn't really saying too much, anything other than the late plant that they had, well, at least compared to last year, now I've got something that I've got to be watching carefully because it could be, well, it could really pull back some of the potential on yield once we get here into January. So that's what I'm watching down there. In the near term, nothing major, I think, to be too concerned about coming out of South America.
Hey, thanks so much, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I will. You too.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. One more item for the afternoon, and we'll look further to the north for this one, where Canadian National Railway workers launched a strike action early Tuesday morning. And that railway strike creates what Canadian prairie farmers are calling, quote, a perfect storm. This new threat adds insult to injury immediately following one of the most difficult harvest seasons in 40 years there, says NAFB member and farm broadcaster Dennis Guy.
The strike by 3,200 CN rail workers is threatening shipments of grain, oilseeds, and potash, along with lumber and oil. Conductors and rail yard operators at Canada's largest railway walked off the job after failing to reach an agreement with company management. CN workers have been without a contract since June. The workers' union, Teamsters Canada, is citing issues that include unsafe working conditions, longer hours, and medical benefits. A CN executive said that the company had offered to go to binding arbitration, but the union declined. Bill Campbell, president of Manitoba's largest general farm organization, Keystone Agricultural Producers, said this rail strike could not have come at a worse time.
This is the time when we need to move our products to get paid and pay off some bills. Rail transportation is by far the most utilized service. Truck transport is not a feasible option. So we really be handcuffed. Hopefully they are able to come to some type of ratification.
Normally, Canadian rail stoppages have not lasted long. Ottawa has typically issued a back-to-work order after declaring railroads an essential service. But it could be different this time. Parliament will not be back in session until December 5th, following the federal election only a month ago, and a cabinet shuffle could see some new faces in primary portfolios. Lewis says his group plans to lobby ministers hard to get this issue back on the rails as soon as possible.
We'll have a transport minister in place and ag minister as well, so the lobbying will begin quite quickly with them to get this fixed before we have any more slowdowns. We've had a difficult harvest season. It's almost a perfect storm as far as bad timing for a railway strike. We need rail transportation.
Reporting from Canada, I'm Dennis Guy.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon from Illinois Public Media.